Season 5, Episode 10, Remembrance of Hump's Past.
Get it.
It opens up with Naomi, who's a bit angry at her super, who's been, hanging a little brain inside of her residence.
Oh, that's right.
She's super pissed, obviously. I mean, I would be. And then, in the middle of her rant to the building owner, I mean, I don't know exactly who she's talking to, but the super is the one coming in showing his dick, and she called somebody else. I guess
what did she call again?
I don't know who she called. I don't know his official title, but it's someone over the supervisor. I don't know, building manager or someone.
The super of the building. It's probably a landlord then.
But I guess the super is next to him to explain his side of the story, but he's been coming in and hanging brain, so she's upset. And in the middle of her angry rant, she slips from her comical southern accent into an Australian accent.
Okay. But the first time you watched this episode, how did you feel?
About that happening? Just that first part?
No, like when you were watching it and all of a sudden there's an Australian accent coming out of her. Like, well, do you remember what your like first thought was?
I remember, because I think I've seen this before, because I always forget that she's actually Australian. But when I saw it this time, my immediate thought was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like,
yeah.
What Twilight
that
Zone
episode? That was the first time it happened, when all of a sudden she's like, she sounds like Chris Hemsworth. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what?
Yeah, like, what?
Like, what are we doing?
What the fuck are we talking about?
It just felt like a very odd choice.
We'll talk about her, I think, towards the end of this episode, I think. What's going on with her is real weird, and I think the reason I've kind of blocked her existence in this show for my brain is because, like, my brain can't accept what they're telling me. If that makes sense?
Yeah.
Like, it just goes like, yeah, that character doesn't matter, because her whole thing doesn't make any goddamn sense. But as she...
Yeah, because, like, spoiler, her existence in the show is very quick.
Yeah, she doesn't last very long, and the story of what happens to her is, like, so weird that I kind of wonder if she just got, like, a way more lucrative modeling job and was like, fuck it, I gotta get off this show quick. Or
is she a model? Is that what's up?
I think so, because to me she looks like a model, and I wondered why she was on this job anyway. But when she slips into the Australian accent, Simone catches a bit of it and kind of is confused, as we all would be.
Uh-huh.
And kind of lets it go, and just says good morning. And then Wally, I don't remember his last name, is it Weaver? Wally is on the bench waiting for her to get off the phone, and she asks him, how can I help you, sir? And he sees Sipowicz and connects with him, because they're old buddies. And he says,
yeah.
He's like, can I talk to you privately about something? And he's like, sure, we'll go into the coffee room. And then Simone checks the accent again just by asking Naomi what's going on, because he's a detective, so he wants to sleuth out what's going on. And that's the beginning. We cut to the theme song, and this is NYPD Blue Balls, where me, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. When we come back, Wally and Sipowicz...
Would you have handled it the same way Simone did?
I mean, maybe we should talk about that. Because, yeah, let's go over the Naomi shit. Let's just talk about it. Just get it out of the way. Because it is weird. I would have reacted the same way, but I would have definitely pulled her aside to be like, what happened? Like, I would have done it immediately. As soon as she was free and I was free. I would have been like, what happened?
Okay.
Because it's so weird and I don't know what to do about it. So I'd be like, just what happened? Later in the episode, Naomi talks to Fancy, because Fancy comes in and she brings up the appendix, the appendicitis, and the appendectomy.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you haven't listened to our previous episode, I don't know why, it's in sequential order, but in the last episode we talked about how the episode before this was edited, and it edited out Fancy's daughter having an appendicitis and getting an appendectomy. So in this episode, they bring it up. Naomi talks
about... That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Naomi basically just brings up how it gives her kind of a crazy image in her head that they had to have the surgery done through her belly button. And then there's moments throughout the episode where you can see little glances of Naomi being uncomfortable when she sees Simone, because clearly Simone knows some shit is going on with her identity. And then, where is it in the episode? It's way towards the end, but it's not the end. Oh, that's right. Because there's something that happens in this episode. I watched it 5 times. I rewound and watched it 5 times. Because it made me laugh every single time. So when we get there, I'll explain it. But this happens right before that. She has a moment with Simone. She explains to Simone that she has been using an accent and an identity that is not accurate. She is not from Durham, North Carolina. Or South Carolina. She is Australian from...
Hello, mate.
She has made false documents and such to try and become a New York City police officer because she loves and respects them so much thanks to television.
It's like her fucking dream.
And she affected this fucking bonkers southern accent because she also loved Ellie Mae from the Beverly Hillbillies.
Now, I missed that part. That's fucking ridiculous. I missed that shit.
So, Simone is listening to all this.
All of it.
And he kind of gives the response I think I would in that situation, which is like, I'm not going to jam you up. However, you're going to be fucked very quickly because you just had a fight with your landlord and now he knows you're probably not from this country. So to get out of this, he's probably just going to tell INS.
Yeah, he's probably just going to fuck with you now. You're in trouble.
Simone is like, yeah, you're going to probably run into trouble, but not with me. And then she goes further by saying, how would you like
me to... Between you and me, I feel like Simone isn't doing his duty as an employee to tell Fancy that this woman is, like, illegally working here.
My position on that is twofold. I think what we've now learned about Naomi is she's fucking crazy, and she's smart enough to manipulate a whole bunch of shit to achieve her very weird backwards-ass goals.
Yeah, I'm just being an NYPD police person.
And I think Simone kind of sees this as, okay, this person might be a little too crazy for me to get involved with. I kind of want to just get out of this situation. And maybe you're right. I think he knew in the back of his mind, like, oh, well, then she's just fucked. Because once they find out you falsified documents to stay in this country, you're out of the fucking country.
Like, yeah.
You gone.
She's in a lot of trouble.
So he knew, like, it doesn't matter what I say, it's fucking over for her. And she invoked the name of the NYPD to threaten the guy on the phone, which is like, if you're in a country illegally, you don't want to bring cops into it at all.
Yeah, you don't want to be throwing around a threat you can't back either, because she can't really back the NYPD being a part of anything, you know? I feel like she made a lot of bad moves.
And she asked Simone, like, what would you like me to sound like when we're talking in private? Because I could show it as a gesture of appreciation. And he's like, what do you think? And she's like, I probably should just keep the southern accent. He's like, yeah, probably. I think he was just like, I need to get the fuck out of here. He's like, I just drank 2 shots of crazy with this woman, and I just need to get the hell out.
She's a lunatic.
So that's the whole Naomi nonsense. So we got 2 cases, one with Simone and Sipowicz. Well, no, it's just Sipowicz. I don't think Simone's really involved at all. He is eventually. Simone and Sipowicz, and then Medavoy and Martinez. Sipowicz talks to his buddy Wally, who comes in because he's worried about his daughter. She's been in some legal scraps. And is dealing with a guy named Tony, who's a real ass.
He's just running with the wrong crowd, bro.
And then the real question, where we're really going to dig in with this episode, is the politics of gender identity. So let's get to it. Because
her... Who better to explain that than some old white men?
Yeah, so Wally, who is obviously Sipowicz's age, they went to school together. He says, "My daughter's running with a bad crowd, bad boyfriend. Think she's doing drugs. She's been in trouble with the law. And her roommate's got her own complex." And he's like, "What kind of complex?" She's like, "You know, she's a carpenter's apprentice." She's like, "Yeah, you know those fucking carpenter apprentice bitches. What the fuck does that have to do with it?" "She's a carpenter's apprentice. She kind of dresses kind of manly." I was like, "Okay, a lesbian." That's my first thought. It's like, "Okay, that's fine." And then Sipowicz is like, "Okay, I'll look into it." And he mentions, like, "Oh, I even sent my buddy Bruce over there, who was a mutual friend, because his daughter died in a drunk driving accident." Kind of give her, like, the error of her ways.
The old 1-2.
And then he says, Wally, before he leaves, "Oh, by the way, my sister Doris gives her best." And Sipowicz is like, yeah, tell her I said hi.
Yeah, dude.
You know, he leaves. Later in that episode, Sipowicz waits until Russell's not at the desk, because they're all, well, I think somebody went to the bathroom.
And they're all chit-chatting about stuff.
So, Sipowicz, I really love how sly this is. Sipowicz has, like, he has a rolling chair, and he has, like, licorice. And he kind of waits.
Yeah, he's like a little kid. He's, like, back in school.
He waits until no one's around. And he engages in what we like to call, thanks to our new society, locker room talk. And he kind of just gets that chair over to Simone, and he's like, "So, here's the deal. Wally's sister, Doris. Let's be clear. She's big and she's ugly. Like, that was at the top. You have to understand that this bitch is ugly and fat."
Oh, I thought he was trying to describe her more as being big than ugly, but okay.
Because he mentions at one point that her eye doesn't go straight.
Oh, that's right. He pulls down on the eye, yeah.
And he says, "She had a real chest on her." You know, the way we describe women, because they're objects. And then he tells the story that he banged her in a small car, and it wasn't his best work. You know, he wasn't banging on all cylinders when he threw her that hump, as he puts it. So he took her out on another date because he wanted to throw her a good hump before he goes to Vietnam.
War, yeah.
And he felt bad because he thinks that gave her the impression that he wanted a relationship. Which, you know, crazy women thinking that after you fuck them twice, that
they
you
want a relationship. Yeah, yeah.
They want to actually be with you.
He did the more noble thing, and he didn't want you to think that his sex game was bad.
It's more important that you know my sex game is on point.
Yeah.
But I don't actually want to be with you. I just want to make sure you leave having a good time.
Oh, care, like, feelings? Care for you? No.
What I also love is, like, Sipowicz, because it's a very funny scene. Like, the thing that's kind of sad about it is, like, we joke because it's kind of, like, unbelievable man nonsense. But it is a very funnily written scene, but also kind of fucked up.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what also makes it kind of funny. Also makes it funnier is that it is fucked up.
And then my favorite part is, like, Sipowicz at one point says, "I can't leave her thinking that's my best hump." And Simone responds like, "No, you can't have that." Sarcastically. Because even Simone is like, "What are you talking about, man?"
Yeah, he responds to it in a great way, too, though.
They go to leave because I think Russell showed up and him and Simone and Russell were going somewhere. And he's like, "Hey, how about you give her a call and go out with her?" And Sipowicz responded with, "Yeah, or I can tie myself to a street cleaner and have him drag me through the five boroughs." And Russell gives him a look like, "What the fuck are you guys talking about?" Like, yeah. Just the look on her face like, "What are you dumbasses talking about right now?
You two knuckle draggers talking about?"
The next scene, Sipowicz goes to visit Carla and Margot. And Margot, you know, she's got short hair, dressing very manly. But very respectful, very cool, inviting him in, offering him something.
She looks like every hipster in fucking Brooklyn right now.
And Carla is, from the first moment she talks to Sipowicz, kind of a bitch.
So, how do I say this without being offensive?
You can't, so I'd say just go.
So do we think Marlo is
I believe it's
their first name? Or do we think that this is a name that they've chosen for themselves because they're transitioning, or is she just a lesbian?
There's dialogue to indicate that she's saving up for a sex change.
Okay.
There's also, I believe Margot is her birth name, because I think that's a female name. I mean, I think so.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, never mind.
But the reason that this
Take
whole...
Take it all back.
The reason this is all so sticky is I think Margot has very serious feelings for Carla, and Carla uses that to antagonize her boyfriend and her dad, because she knows it makes both of them uncomfortable and makes her boyfriend angry, because Carla is a manipulative, horrible bitch. And we learn that at the end of this.
Straight bitch.
She's a straight, horrible bitch. And Carla reacts to Sipowicz like, oh yeah, you can't tell me what I can do and can't do. And she actually invited Tony over, and Tony was like a dick from moment one, too. And Margot's like, I don't like Tony. I don't like him in my house. I think he's a scumbag. I think he's a horrible person.
Yeah, that dude was a douche. That dude's a good character actor.
Oh, yeah, he did a great job. And Margot was very supportive of Carla, because even when Carla was, like, upset because Sipowicz asked if she was on drugs, Margot was like, look, that's a privacy issue, but we don't have drugs in this residence. But she keeps talking about her rights, and Sipowicz says, that's why I wake up glad that I fought overseas, Carla, so people like you can make such good use of their rights.
He has some zingers every now and then. He's pretty good.
And Tony makes a comment that makes Sipowicz almost punch him, where he says, like, I bet he likes weird geeks that are saving up for a sex change. And Sipowicz is the one that says, open your mouth again, and I'm gonna bitch slap you, all right, Tony? Or you're gonna get bitch slapped, all right, Tony? Tony and Carla go out, and as he's leaving, he makes a comment to Sipowicz about looking himself in the mirror and telling him to stay out of it. But then he's like, I tell you the same thing, Margot, but you're so ugly it'd probably break.
Felt like there was no need for that one.
No need at all. And Sipowicz is like, as he leaves, Margot is like, I'm sorry it blew up. And he's like, my suggestion? Throw all her shit outside and change the locks. Then, the next...
Which is weird for Sipowicz. Well, no, that's not weird. You're right. I take that back. Because Sipowicz is normally... is kind to people no matter what they do. Or who they are. He may not agree with them, like, being... like, transsexuals or being gay or anything... But if they're good people, he's good people back.
And the next morning, they get a DOA at the very same place where he was. Before he gets that information, he talks to Fancy, and he's like, I witnessed the downfall of our society. And he's like, why? What happened? And he's like, first off, I go to the home to a sex change aspirant who was pretty cool. And it's like, then why the fuck does that matter?
Yeah, like, that's weird.
Like, that was kind of the Sipowicz two cents on top of something that has nothing to do with what's actually going on. Where he's like, sex change aspirant, who turns out was very cool and very respectful. And it's like, then why the fuck does that even matter? That's not important
to
what you're doing.
Yeah, like, so then has nothing to do with anything, any part of the story, of the downfall of the story.
And then he mentions, oh, my buddy's shitty daughter being an asshole, and then now there's a DOA, and they go down, and him and Simone see that basically Margot was beaten to death with a fucking hammer.
Pretty cool.
And when they, after they see that, they come outside, and they're told that a guy keeps coming to the crime scene and checking it out, like he wants to see what's going on, and Sipowicz sees that it's Bruce Hoag, the guy that was asked to go talk to Wally's daughter earlier. And Andy gets very aggressive with him because he can tell that Bruce Hoag either saw something or was the first on the scene and called it in. Like, he knows Bruce knows something, but Bruce is being very quiet, which is angering Sipowicz and agitating him. So he's like, we're going to have to talk to you later. And Sipowicz, of course, is obviously agitated because all of his friends are involved. So when he comes back to run it for Fancy, he's like... So the hermaphrodite DOA, and Fancy was like, she was a hermaphrodite? And he's like, yeah, whatever. And Bruce Hoag is there, and probably not involved, but he was there at the scene, and I think he saw something, but he won't talk about it. And then it gets quiet, and he's like, you want me to go pick him up, don't you? And then Fancy doesn't say a word, and he's like, fine, I'll go get the particulars of where these scumbags hang out, and then we'll go pick up Bruce, okay? And then walks out.
He, like, answers his own questions. It's kind of funny.
And then Sipowicz looks at Medavoy's and Martinez, who have to come in and run down their investigation. He goes, he's in a mood today. And and walks past him.
But then don't they talk to him, Medavoy and Martinez? Don't they talk to Fancy, and at the end of it, they're like, hey, he wasn't that bad.
Yeah, that's exactly what Medavoy said. He's like, he doesn't seem to be like, in a mood.
He wasn't that bad of a mood.
Sipowicz and Simone go pick up Bruce Hogue at work, and he's just, like, very tentative to do so, and they're like, so do you want us to drag you out of here? Or eventually he goes. When they bring him back, Sipowicz is like, do you want to run it for Mr. Nitpick? And he like squares up to Fancy, like it's a problem. And says,
yeah, he's like testy from the get-go. It's kind of weird.
And he even goes like, that's Bruce Hogue. Okay, they got the other two up in anti-crime. He's like, okay, I'm gonna go talk to him then. And like drags him into the coffee room. And then Simone is like, yeah. And then Fancy's like, so that's Bruce Hogue? And Simone's like, yep, that's Bruce. Sipowicz is trying to get it out of Bruce, who's just being tight-lipped, because I guess he's worried he's going to lose his place on the liver list, which he needs. But I don't...
Yeah, I found that interesting, too.
Which I don't know if that would be the case if you didn't actually do anything. Like, if...
I know, but I think if you're involved in a crime, can't... Like, if you're a felon, or if... I think, then you can't receive... You get lower on the list compared to for, like, body or liver transplants or things like that compared to other people. I think.
But even Sipowicz was like, I don't think you did anything here, Bruce. I think you called it in. All you have to do is tell me that so that we don't have to keep you in suspicion.
Oh, well, that's the bigger thing, is that he is, like, putting himself more in trouble than he needs to be.
Yeah, and that was the best part, is, like, Sipowicz is like, I should be in there wringing their necks, but I just need to take the suspicion off of you. And Bruce is like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, damn it, Bruce, go home.
Yeah.
And then Simone's like, do we go after Carla first? And Sipowicz's response is, her sense of decorum, she's liable to try and jump in you in the interview. they go into Carla, and Simone's like, do you want something to drink? And she goes, even beer? And he goes, no, obviously you can't get beer.
Yeah.
The
idiot.
And Sipowicz is going hard, and it's really funny because he's like, we want to hear your side of this thing. And if you weren't involved, we'd like to know now. And she's like, you think I was involved? And Sipowicz's like, it doesn't matter what I think, just let us, just start talking to us. And she's like, I think it was an intruder. And Sipowicz is like, fucking bullshit, man. Just fucking, really? And then she mentions, like, oh, I have a right to a lawyer, and I have a right to remain silent. And Sipowicz was just like, yeah, she's big on her rights. But then he says something that, like, kind of blew my mind, that it was included in the show. He's like, listen here, Carla, you got a right to a lethal injection, and you got a right to time in the joint, getting tuned up every day by a crew of marauding Amazon dykes. And I was like, whoa, buddy. Hey now, that was a little far.
Just trying to get his point across, dude. That's all.
But what's very strange is, because this show, you can probably count them, this show has a lot of, like, random dubbing.
Yeah.
Like, where they're like, okay, we can't use that line, we'll have to use this. And I think they dubbed that to say Amazon dykes.
Okay.
But why did they go with that? And was there something much worse than marauding Amazon dykes?
Yeah, like, why is that the one they landed on?
So, yeah. And Simone, he's playing it sweet, but he basically says, like, look, here's the deal, Carla. If you knew anything about this, you gotta realize that people start looking for their own interest in this situation. Tony will probably flip sooner or later. And Sipowicz said, especially when somebody starts jumping up and down on their nuts like I'm going to be with Tony.
He's doing everything by the book. Love it.
And she admits, like, oh, I was behind locked doors with headphones on. Like, I didn't have anything to do with this. I just made sure the door was unlocked to get him in, and then I was behind my room. And Sipowicz looks at Simone and is like, and you want to blame her for this? gets up and walks away, and she's like, well, he gets a bad temper when he's drinking and sniffing glue. And he's like, and I'm sure you were made sure that he was high on both. And she's like, last time I checked his driver's license, he was white and over 21. Why do you have to be white to sniff glue or drink?
Yeah, I didn't understand what, like, unless it was some kind of, unless she was trying to say, like, oh, he's white, so it's not that, it's not going to be that big of a deal for him, you know?
She said, last time I checked his driver's license, and Sipowicz turns around and says, he's got no driver's license, you skanky pig. And I was like, fucking A, just going after it.
Just murdering him, dude.
And then they go into Tony, and they go hard from moment one, and he doesn't talk for, like, five lines. And Sipowicz says, based on my approach, we'll be jumping up and down on your testicles before saying word one, and I am so eager to do that. Simone says, like, well, I mean, Sipowicz knows that is wrong, and he's like, yeah, I know that's wrong, basically, in theory.
Yeah, I know that's wrong, but I don't give a fuck.
And he says, can I get a word in edgewise? Simone says, before you do, just realize that Carla already told us that she was barricaded in her room while you were doing it. And he said, she was listening to Stairway to Heaven, and I attacked her in self-defense. And Simone was like, you brought over a sledgehammer just in case she would attack you?
None of his story makes sense.
And he says, I was getting sick of the sex freak's threats, and Carla didn't care. She was just using Margot to agitate me and piss off her dad, because she didn't care who she pissed off, as long as it would get her off. And Simone does my favorite thing of this episode. He goes, interrupting our interview approach with you for just a second, Tony, and then just does a cross right to his face. Just punches him right in the face, and drops him to the ground. Then sits him back up in the chair, and goes,
real hard. Like, real hard.
And then puts him back in the chair and goes, go ahead, finish your thought. And the guy's like, what the hell's going on? And I wrote down the whole quote because it's fucking so great. He goes, here? Well, we're talking to someone that everybody in this room knows. Premeditated slaughtering a girl whose only crime was loving the piece of garbage that you were involved with. So we don't have to have that much more to do with you. And with the DAs and the judges tending to pay attention to what we say, we're going to help you put a statement together saying that this was a crime of passion. So that this goes down from premeditated murder to unintentional death, which is...
What I don't understand is why help him?
Oh, they know he's not going to get it. I think they know, as long as they get the admission, he's fucking done. They're just saying what they need to get this fucker written and done.
Because my whole time I was thinking, like, why help this dude if he's such a dick?
And then he goes, I think you broke my jaw. And Sipowicz says, you're enunciating clearly. You got that punch running for the door. I could show you again how it happened.
That's crazy.
And then the guy says, what are my options here? And Simone pushes the notepad closer and he goes, none. And it was just, it was so fucking good. It's like one of the best interrogations. And he says, she egged me on and I should never sniff glue. And I was like, yeah, those are good. That's a good way to live.
It's a good motto to, like, kind of live by for a sec.
After all that, Sipowicz talks to Wally and tells him that his daughter did it for thrill. And he said, well, she doesn't deserve to be in society if that's the case. And when Sipowicz says, do you want to talk to her? He said, you can tell her that I'll pay for a lawyer, which is like, why?
Yeah, like, your daughter's trash, shouldn't she, like, be put away?
And then Sipowicz lets him know to talk to Bruce Holt, because he thinks he's involved, but, like, not in any serious way, just to let him know that you don't blame him.
Yeah, and, like, to help him out, because it seems like he's putting himself in harm's way for no reason.
Simone comes by, and Wally apologizes to him for what his sister did, and then gives more regards to Sipowicz.
What his daughter did, you mean?
Oh, yeah, what did I say?
His sister.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine.
Because what he does do is give more regards to Sipowicz from his sister, and Sipowicz says, tell her I said hi, and instead of saying something like, maybe we should get dinner with my wife, because I'm married now.
Odd that he never mentions that.
And he's married to an angel, Sylvia Costas,
that
any man would be lucky to marry. Simone then says, moron, Tony, for Tony being a moron, he gave us chapter and verse. And Sipowicz just asked, did he include the part where we said he'd get a lighter sentence? He's like, no, I told him not to include that. He's like, yeah, that's where the moron part really comes in. And that's when Sipowicz says he's going to call Bruce Hoag to let him know things are all right with him. And that's when Simone actually breaks off to talk to Naomi. But Sipowicz makes some jokes about getting older. You know, not being able to see, not being able to piss. The other story in this episode, which I'll go by as fast as possible, because the only thing I want to talk about is the very end of it. A guy named Steve Pretty shows up and gets Martinez and Medavoy, and he has a clinky jar that's filled with gold teeth.
It's fucking weird.
A junkie brought it in saying that they're family heirlooms, and he needed to pawn them for his kid, and the pawn shop owner knew it was BS.
So this makes me think that this has to be, like, something that happened.
Probably.
Before. It's, like, pretty detailed, you know what I mean?
The pawn shop owner wanted some moving violations removed for the information on it. And then to be just a real weirdo, also wanted the teeth. Don't know why.
Yeah, he still wanted to keep them, which is awkward.
He also touched them with his hands, and that really freaked Medavoy the fuck out.
I mean, who... Is that your the first thing in your brain if someone brings you teeth is to just start touching them?
Because Medavoy tries to do it with, like, the notebook, and the fucking pawn shop guy was like, fuck, you're taking forever, just grab them with your hands, put them in the jar, and it's like, they're teeth.
Stop being a bitch, let's go.
Like, we got shit to do.
You got a crime to solve so I can keep these teeth, alright?
The Medavoy and Martinez get the junkie until, this is when they run by Fancy What's Going On, and say that they're going to flip the junkie for the whole body operation. And they go hard at this guy named Darren, who looks like a junkie, and says he just disposes of the bodies for some cheap-ass rate, and he's been putting them in dumpsters and wherever he could, and he just took the teeth to get a little more money, because they don't give him that much to do it, and gives up the name Leonard Sheeny. Sheeny or Sheehy? I think it's Sheehy.
Sheehy. Because the way Medavoy says it, it's weird, I think.
And they convince him to wear a wire, and the guy's worried that it's going to pick up his heartbeat.
Yeah.
But they say, why don't you wear a wire on this guy, and then we can arrest him for the whole body operation, because they'd rather arrest him for what's going on. They go down to the cemetery, and Darren talks to Leonard, and Leonard is a dick. He's like, why are you taking me away from my real life? And the guy's like, I'm uneasy with it. He's like, that's highfalutin for a junkie. I pay you good enough money to just take these bodies elsewhere.
He becomes a real douche.
And when they arrest him, they were like, you're under arrest. He's like, for what? He's like, for commingling remains. And Martinez says something like, and that's a felony in the city of New York, you ghouly bastard. Because the dude does look like a fucking cast member of Disneyland's Haunted Mansion.
Well, I mean, he's dealing with dead bodies. What did you expect?
Your work affects you. We get him into an interrogation room. Medavoy is by himself, and he mentions that Martinez is at amniocentesis. It's a very fast line, which is weird. He's like, you know what, Mr. Sheehy? You're lucky that my partner is at his wife's amniocentesis. I can't say the word. Because he was eager to talk to you because of how bad this crime is. And I was like, okay, so basically... Nicholas Turturro couldn't be there that day. So they had to write that bullshit line as fast as possible.
Yeah, but it's like, what I found funny is, like, this doesn't bother you, though, Medavoy? Like, you wish your partner was here to get mad at you, but you don't give a fuck that much? Like, I just found that funny.
And Medavoy was pretty pissed, because he's like, look, I want you to be open with us, I want you to admit what you did, because I want to know how this came to pass. And the guy's like, you're not mad at any crime I committed. Because the dude is like, I'm willing to pay the nominal fees to get this over with, or you can call my lawyer.
And yeah, he's being a dick.
And Medavoy is like, I want to know how this came to pass, and I want you to tell me. And this is what's really weird. The guy's been a dick the entire time, and then he said something I completely agree with that made me nervous. Because he said, you're not mad at the crimes I committed, you're mad because of your taboos about death. And he says, there's a finite amount of space on the earth, and we need to get rid of this idea that we need to hold everybody's remains in high regard. Which...
I get it. Like, I get it.
The way he's going about it's real dickish.
Yeah.
But I don't completely disagree with that. And then Metavoy...
Like, why not recommend, like, cremation, you know?
Yeah, there's just other something options. Different. Recommend burial at sea. but, and that, and then that's when I wrote this. Metavoy doesn't really win this argument. Because the guy is like, you're just mad because about your taboos of death. And he's like, I'm mad because people don't want their relatives dug up. And he's like, look, there's a finite amount of space on the earth, and we can't have consideration for everybody's remains. And then he's like, you know what? I think you're just a mercenary that's playing himself off like a philosopher. And then he looks at the teeth and he's like, calcium, dentum, and another fucking element. He's like, that's all that's in that jar. Metavoy gets up and he's like, you know what? I am going to call your lawyer.
I mean, the dude's not half wrong, though, you know?
He's just a dick about doing it.
And yeah, he's a dick about the way he's doing it and how he's explaining it.
And, in theory, he's profiting off of it. You know what I mean? Because what he's saying is like, look, guys, you don't have any...
So if he wasn't profiting off of it, you wouldn't have a problem with it?
I think the problem is he was going about an illegal way to make space on his cemetery to then sell to other people as space for their loved ones.
Yes.
If he was had this attitude but was like, I need to figure out a way to move these bodies in a legal way that the people who are related to these bodies will accept, and then he has this attitude, then, like, I'm not mad at him. Because then it's like, okay, you have a business, you have mouths to feed, whatever, and your business has a finite amount of space to deal with these bodies, and in reality, at some point, these people have been there long enough that the relatives of these people aren't going to go visit, because they're great-great-great-great-grandkids who probably don't even know that that person's there. There should be a way to kind of, like, work it out to where you can make that space. But that guy's just like, dig it up, fuck it, get a new person in there. That's why he's a dick.
No, I agree. I think we should stop laying people parallel and start laying them, like, straight up and down.
Exactly.
Right?
I think
right?
We should start making graves like ice cube trays, and then we fold them up in a little ball.
Well, they're dead, so fold them in half, and you cut down either way.
I've been learning a lot about Legos. We form them into where they're in, like, they snap into each other.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, I feel like you could have that opinion and that attitude if you go about it the right way. But since he's being a dick and doing something illegal, it's like, yeah, fuck him. And that's Metavoy's take. It's like, fine, we're going to call your lawyer. Or that's how that story actually ends. It leads to the thing that made me laugh 5 times, that it made me laugh every time I saw it. So I mentioned earlier that Simone had this conversation with Naomi. And then it transitions into the end of the episode where Simone walks through the office. And then as he's walking out of the conversation with Naomi, I'm going to use this as a prop. It's a pack of mints.
It's a pack of what?
It's a pack of mints.
Metavoy, prop work. Carrot tops of the house.
Metavoy is sitting in his chair and he's spinning the glass jar full of teeth. Keep in mind, he hasn't spoken to Simone about his case at all. Simone doesn't know what he's doing.
So Simone has no reference to the teeth.
To anything at all.
To anything. Okay.
And Metavoy is sitting there with a jar, flipping it, and he hears the noises. And Simone and him catch eyes, and Metavoy goes, he holds up the jar and goes, teeth. Like, and Simone's face is like, cool, Metavoy. And just keeps walking. I laughed every time.
My god, dick. Teeth.
Hey, teeth. Just like, what the fuck?
Sometimes Metavoy's good. But like,
every time. I laughed out loud every time because it's just so great. Like, chink, chink, chink a chink, falling teeth, lock eyes, teeth. Just like, that's not an explanation, Metavoy. That makes you look crazy. And then Simone leaves him and goes to Sipowicz, and Sipowicz asks, what was that conversation about with Naomi? And he, like, puts on his coat and kind of, like, gives a weird smile and then just salutes him. Kind of like, Naomi really appreciates our hard work and the people of the NYPD, so here's a salute And I walk out, and Sipowicz sees her come out of the room and sit back at her desk, and he just kind of gives a salute to no one, and then the episode ends.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, the whole TV thing is weird. I just feel like that was something that specifically happened to one of the writers as a detective. It was just too, I feel like it was just too detailed, you know what I mean?
And I think this whole episode was written because somebody thought it'd be hilarious if Sipowicz told that humping story.
Yeah.
Like, I think the whole episode was like, wouldn't it be great if we just had, like, a real guy's moment with Sipowicz?
And this hump story that's pretty funny. I think we should give it a shot.
So then they, like, wrote this whole episode around it. And then Bill Clark was also like, ah, yeah, I remember this one crazy teeth story.
Yeah, I have this really interesting story about this guy who, like, this pawn shop informant we had came to us. It's like, this guy was selling teeth. Yeah, fucking teeth, dude. Yeah, like, and then it's like, no, I got this humping story, though. Let's put that in there.
Oh, God, it's funny. But that fucking moment. Teeth. What? Like, like, the fact that Simone didn't, like, I feel like any other situation, if they had more time, he'd be like, what? It's like, oh, jars full of gold teeth. And that still doesn't explain anything, but it's just...
What does that have to do with anything, Metaboy?
Teeth.
That's what it's supposed to do. What does this have to do with anything?
Oh, man, so funny. Okay, anything else about the episode before we wrap it up?
They really just brush under, like, Naomi having an accent.
It happens very quickly, and it goes out just as quick.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of...
Like, cool with it.
It's like the reveal that you'd expect would take up a lot of time, but it really doesn't. It's kind of like, oh yeah, she's actually Australian, cool.
Yeah, it's just really weird. It's just really, really weird.
But, I mean, what I wrote is, she seems genuinely insane to say, I want to be a New York policewoman so much, I can't accept being a police officer in Australia. I don't know why.
She wasn't even, like, trying to be something in her, like, home country. And then was like, you know what? No. I want to be in a New York police. And, like, I came here, like, I have these skills. Like, none of that. It was like, I just got up and left Australia one day. And wanted to be a New York police detective.
And
so bad. So bad that I did everything illegally.
And... The insane thing where she mentions, oh, it's because I love this one television show about New York detectives or New York police officers. And then she's like, oh, and I affected this very comical, ridiculous Southern accent. Cartoonish, some would say.
Because I thought that was the best way to, like, get through all this.
And it's like, the reason I did that is because I love the Beverly Hillbillies. And it's like, okay, well, you're crazy. You've been crazy there.
But doesn't that trip you out, Kirk, that, like, this is going to be a weird, weird thing I'm about to say. But doesn't it trip you out that, like, there's people who've died and, like, their favorite TV show was, like, Bewitched? Or, like, My Three Dads. Or, like, My Three Sons. Or, like, Leave It to Beaver. Or, like, All in the Family. Like, they didn't get to see, like, what television's become. Like, what good storytelling has become, you know?
Well, it's also, like, television... I may be wrong where I say, like, I don't think television was as important and as in everyone's face as it is now. Like, I think television was just kind of like, oh, yeah, we watch some TV from time to time. It wasn't like now where it's, I go to Communicon... And I talk about my theories about season 3 and analyze each episode, where podcasts exist, where people talk about them, where it's like, nobody would make the Leave It to Beaver podcast, because it's like, we don't take it seriously, it's fucking TV. I mean, I think with more time...
Well, some would say there shouldn't be podcasts about certain shows anyways. It's just interesting. When our grandfathers, who we didn't really know that well, were dying, or died... Their favorite TV show was, like, MASH, right? And, like, we've seen MASH, and Breaking Bad is better than anything that's ever been written by MASH. trash. You know what I mean? And that's just one show. There's like tons of other shows.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have so much entertainment at our fingertips that you get to parse. Yeah. You get to parse out garbage. Like, I mean, we talked about it a little bit. You're not into Letterkenny, and you've like you can decide like, oh, I don't really like this show. I'm not gonna watch it. Just like anybody could watch a show on Netflix or something and go, you know what, this isn't really me. But we do have kind of these tentpole things where it's like, if you find somebody who's like, I don't really like Seinfeld, and it's like, well, what the fuck do you not like about it? Or I guess The Office is another one where it's like, if people say, I don't like The Office, it's like, well, then you just probably don't get comedy.
I kind of agree with that a little bit.
People find out that I do a podcast about this show and they don't fucking know what this show is. And I'll say, like, but I bet you watch Law & Order, right? And like, oh, I love Law & Order. I was like, well, it's like Law & Order, but good all the time. And then they get offended because they really like Law & Order. And I was like, you haven't seen my show. You don't know. Anyway, every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, mostly announcing when new episodes come out, but I will talk to you about shows. I assume we missed some stuff about this one. You can contact on there to talk about it. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Wash your hands. Stay inside if you can. And have a good one. Peace.
Later.
Thanks again for listening. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show if you're listening to it on any platform that allows for ratings and reviews. That's how it gets up in the algorithm and more people will see the show, hopefully listen to it, but more importantly, watch the best show ever, NYPD Blue. Right now it is currently on Hulu, no longer on Amazon, and I will let you know as soon as it's on any other available streaming service. Right now it's only Hulu. If you need more NYPD Blue information in your life, you can always check out a couple books. There's True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. There's What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles written about the show from all walks of life on all types of subjects. And then there's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, written by Gene Kendall. That's on Amazon for 99 cents. There's tons of stuff out there for everybody. Have a good one. Please keep safe. Wash your hands. Keep your face covered. Do not go out unless you have to. And have yourself a good one. Keep watching NYPD Blue or watch something else. Just stay inside.